1051.
Catch Art Bell 7 days a week on Hot Talk 1051.
Killed the orbiter from the high deserts in the great American Southwest. I bid you good evening and or good morning, whatever the case may be, wherever you are. And that would include commercially the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands out west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the pole, worldwide, of course, on the Internet, thanks to Broadcast.com, who distributes all of these electrons for us across the ever-widening Internet, and, naturally, the Intel Corporation. I wish I had their little logo sound to go with that. Hey, Intel, send me your little logo sound so I can play it. I like that thing. Maybe I can even use it as a stinger. And they put together the math that allows the G2 program that allows you to see this program as it unfolds before your very eyes, which means you're just sitting there really staring at me, a talking head. And, of course, we have the webcam as well, so a lot going on here and a lot going on tonight. They have killed the orbiter. And we have just the right person in the first hour to comment on it. Richard C. Hoagland coming up. In the next hour, the director of the motion picture, Stigmata, is going to be here. That's going to be very interesting. I know very, very little about the Stigmata. So Rupert Wainwright, the director, will be here to tell us about it. That is the top-grossing movie, having just displaced The Sixth Sense in the number one spot. So let me throw the switches here so that we can begin sending video. There, we've finally done that a little late. And in a moment, we will go to Richard C. Hoagland. I will read you a brief story, and then Richard, as you might imagine, has some comments about the apparent occurrences of the day on the Red Planet. The CC radio is the best radio in the world. Everybody says it now. Gary Krakow of MSNBC has reviewed the CC radio and said, quote, the radio's sensitivity and selectivity unmatched by anything I have ever seen. This is MSNBC now. He said, tuning in a station was easier than any other radio I've ever tried. He said, it's the best AM radio I've ever had the pleasure of trying. At $160, it's a bargain. Oh, and it is. It is indeed. AM, FM, and television audio, of course, NOAA Weather Alert, which might well save your life. It's got all that, and it's simply, it's the best radio in the world. That's all there is to it. So if you're tired of your old clunker that doesn't receive anything the way it ought to, and you want to hear stations you've never heard before, or more importantly, hear the ones you want to hear that you're sort of marginally hearing right now, this radio makes it all come alive. Two versions, one the basic radio, $159.95, or as MSNBC said, really $160. And the Platinum Edition, the world's first high-performance solar-powered radio. Comes with a solar power panel, and it charges the high-capacity batteries during the day and plays a radio and then plays it all night long. It comes with an LED light, $294.95, and boy, worth every single penny. That's the CEC radio. You won't believe it until you try it, and try it you should. Call Bob Crane in the morning at 6:30 a.m. at 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863, the C. Crane Company. Now, Permapack. What's that? I bet you didn't know they call themselves Permapack, technically, did you? Permapack is the J. Michael Stevens Company, or J. Michael Stevens Group. in Salt Lake City, and they sell storable food. Food that will last 10 to 12 years, has a 10 to 12 year shelf life. Very serious for you to consider right now. Hey, has anybody been watching the stock market over the last week? It was up over 11,000 at the beginning of the week. It had a 200 points the other day. And today, another 200 points. It's down to like 10.3 or something. I'm really telling you, October, November, December, January, and the first half of 2000, assuming that we all make it right, is going to be a really, really strange time. There's no question about it. This is going to be a wild, wild time, and having some storable food around is a really good idea. This is a company now, folks, that will sell you stored food, storable food, if you will. And it's so excellent, so very good, that their own company, the company itself, has exceeded the shelf life claims of its food, and there aren't many companies around that can make that claim. Very, very few. So, I suggest that you listen very carefully to the number that I'm about to give out. And for heaven's sakes, give them a call. Get the information on the way. It can't hurt to read about it. What can hurt is for something to happen and you to have to say to your family, well, you know, I thought about storable food. I heard about it. I knew about it. But I forgot to call and find out about it. The short pack under $500. You wouldn't want to have to explain that, right? Under $500. Call the J. Michael Stevens Group at 1-800-377-0700. That's 1-800-377-0700.
Golf is my passion. I play three times a week.
All right, here we go. The Associated Press, September 23rd, a $125 million NASA spacecraft that had traveled 416 miles to Mars, vanished. Their word, vanished Thursday, as it was about to go into orbit around the red planet and was feared destroyed. It was the second time in 6 years that a NASA spaceship was lost just as it reached Mars. And at the risk of irritating somebody out there, Ed Dames, in fact, predicted this would occur. The Mars Climate Orbiter, which was on a mission to study that planet's weather and look for signs of water, apparently, like the wax figure you recall, flew too close to the Martian atmosphere and broke apart or burned up, the agency said. Broke apart or burned up. Human or software error was probably to blame. NASA said mechanical problems were ruled out. Now, I wish to consider that line, so remember that line, will you please? Human or software error was probably to blame. The apparent loss after the $1 billion Mars Observer probe disappeared back in 1993 comes as Congress is threatening to cut a large portion of NASA's space exploration budget, and the agency is trying to show that it can design faster, cheaper, better missions. Faster, cheaper, better. Kaboom. NASA officials said failures are to be expected since probes are now being launched every 26 months. They also pointed to their successors, like the Mars Global Surveyor spacecraft, you remember that, the little car, right? And Pathfinder, actually that was a little car, which landed on the planet with the rover, which is a little car, to much acclaim in 1997, and we got all those really good pictures of the rocks named after cartoons. So, I now have for you from California, I think somewhere in California, Deck the halls with photographs, of course, of Richard C. Hoagland at NASA. He was, in fact, one time, actually, a NASA advisor. He doesn't do lunch there a lot anymore. He was advisor to Walter Cronkite during the years of manned spaceflight that we all remember that were so exciting. And he's won an Engstrom Science Award. And he drives a lot of people really crazy. And, you know, he's the guy who you know is going to have something to say about this. From California, somewhere or another, here's Richard C. Hoagland. Hi, Richard.
Good evening, Art.
I wish we were meeting on better circumstances.
This is eerie. This is like, who was the catcher for the New York Yankees?
I'm not a baseball fan, Richard.
Okay. Famous guy who used to always have a one-liner. And it was kind of like you would say things like, well, this is deja vu all over again. This is deja vu.
Yes.
We have been here before. We have been down this canyon before. Where I am tonight the very pleasant house guest of Paul Davids and his lovely wife, Hollis. I am here in town for something which is so incredibly coincidental.
No, what town, Richard?
This is Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. Okay.
Yes, I'm on the West Coast in Southern California.
All right.
You know, major earthquake in Taiwan. I'm looking to leave very quickly.
7.6.
Yeah.
Do you notice the Californians to be particularly touchy right now?
Well, what I'm noticing is the rash of major earthquakes ringing the planet.
Oh, you noticed,
which are statistically way out of bounds.
Yeah, we noticed, too.
You know, Jim was on the other night, I guess.
I know. There was an earthquake after he was on in Northern California. Then there was one in Ohio.
Well, I'm looking to leave town as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to be here because there's some very important events going on here, one of which I'll get to in the second half hour of our time together tonight, which is so coincidental. It is a major announcement which we can now tonight make, and we can get some folks to help us do something that can put an end to this nonsense. So before the top of the hour, we will get to what is going to happen and what they can do. But this is just too much. There is no doubt in my mind this is not accidental. Let me tell you how I know, right? Space missions only work because of exquisite, meticulous planning, pre-planning.
Well, look, this was less of a challenge, in my way of thinking, than getting Cassini successfully as close to Earth as they did to slingshot it out. There was a hairy one to try.
Oh, sure, because you have to be very precise in your navigation. They're talking now about a navigation error. You understand that if this kind of error had happened on Cassini, we would have been toast?
Yeah, toast, I know.
72, you know, pounds.
I know. In other words, oops, it re-entered. Now, may I ask you about one line in the story first?
Sure.
It says, human or software error was to blame. Well, I don't see the difference between the two, because humans write the software.
I was going to say, do they have monkeys writing software these days over at the agency? When I was there, we had human beings writing software. We had human beings checking software.
That's what
I
think,
too. We had human beings interrogating computers.
Right.
A million times between you launch, it takes you 8 or 9 months to cruise the long way around. It's 416 million miles. You misspoke just a tad earlier.
It's 416 million miles is what it says.
Yeah, you said 416, and I knew you were not reading the million because your eyes glaze over. The fact is you take the long way around the solar system to get there. So they had 8 or 9 months. Check, double check, triple check, quadruple check. There are two critical parts to a mission. When you leave,
when you
arrive.
All right. Well, how high above the surface was this spacecraft supposed to be?
Okay, they were aiming for a little tiny slot in the sky above Mars, about 93 miles above the Martian surface.
93.
That was their first dip through the atmosphere. They were going to establish that as the low point of the orbit. The burn of the engine, the retro rocket, started about 5 minutes before they went over the hill, meaning they went around the back of Mars and disappeared radio line of sight from the Earth because they went into the shadow, the radio shadow of the planet.
So, in other words, there was radio silence.
Radio silence.
Whenever this happened.
And then they were supposed to... Well, they had 5 minutes of ground link where they saw, obviously delayed because the speed of light is bringing the signal to you after it's already happened. They saw the engine light up. They saw the attitudes. They saw they had a good burn. They were cheering at JPL, according to my sources. And then they kind of realized that they were going to be deeper by something like 12 and a half to 15 miles.
Right. So I've got that here.
And they had predicted, which I find absolutely impossible. It's like something commanded that spacecraft to make a sharp turn so that the thrust, instead of being straight back, was at an angle driving them deeper into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
That looks like a deliberate sabotage or a deliberate program, but not an error. The reason is that these computer programs are checked multiple times against the ground computer.
I have a layman question for you.
Yep.
I think it was you and I, Richard. If not, then with another guest. But somebody was saying that a sun flare or a CME, coronal mass ejection, mm-hmm. could actually cause the expansion of the atmosphere of a planet.
Whoever said that is right, but that's not the problem tonight, because what we're told is not that the Mars atmosphere was fluffier and denser and caused the unexpected drag. We're saying that they dove in 12 and a half to 15 miles deeper than they should have. So it's not the sun. It's not the atmosphere of Mars. It's whoever programmed the damn computer.
Which would mean there was too much or too little burn.
Well, it means the angle.
Well, or, I know, but the angle was established by the burn, right? So was there too much burn or too little burn?
It would have to be too much. In other words, if you were slowing down too fast, you would dive deeper. But I think it was an angle.
Right. Okay, I've got you.
I think it was an angle, which is an attitude, meaning the spacecraft was skewed so that it was actually shifting toward Mars as it was also slowing down.
Gotcha.
That would be the easiest way to sabotage this and make it go away. That's on the presumption that this spacecraft tonight, like the Mars Observer, was really dead. It's really killed. It's really gone, Kenny. All right?
In other words, we may be reporting its death somewhat ahead of its time. You're suggesting that this thing may still be there, really.
And now hidden from the honest guys at NASA, because the little clique that's been running things, you know, doing all the symbolism and hiding spacecraft and
yep.
making things go away and keeping pictures away from us, that little clique, for some reason, is getting really desperate. And in this move, which any honest rocket scientist looking at this is going to be very suspicious, this is tantamount to the discovery of the Waco tapes regarding the, you know, the machine gun fire on the one side of the building and the discovery of pyrotechnics, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, yes.
For the people in the know in NASA, this will stink to high heaven because it just makes no sense. Software is very stupid and follows rules. And the way you find out whether you got a problem is you run the program.
Yeah.
You run it on the ground as a simulation.
Yeah, I agree with this. I don't know that I agree with as far as you go. But look, they if they had that kind of little kind, I mean, here they're saying essentially, oh, well, you know, mistakes will happen in the space program. And
yeah.
I think everybody understands that. But that wasn't their attitude about Cassini that got a damn sight to, or closer, I think, just as close to Earth.
Well, it was about 700 miles miss distance. But remember, if you miss by 12 to 15 miles,
yeah.
in terms of the Earth, a 12 or 15 mile miss because of the gravity would have curved you around in a way that you would have totally missed Saturn. And if you had missed on the mid-course by 12 or 15 miles, which was several months back,
yeah.
you would have hit Earth. In other words, this is an error which propagates with time, and if it can happen on such a routine operation as we have done so many times in the past 30 years, this is the same mission profile that was flown by Mars Surveyor a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
same mission profile that's been flown by the Voyagers and by the Vikings and by the Mariners. I mean, this is not a new thing. We're not at the beginning of the learning curve. We're at the end of a generational-plus learning curve, and we're doing stupid things. Now, why were we doing stupid things? Because, boys, we know more now, and there are certain things that everybody, the rest of us out here paying for it, are not supposed to know.
I do believe the American people would like to know how this mistake could be made. With all the checking and the cross-checking, they know the burn times. They're old hands at this.
Well, remember, a couple of months ago, maybe even less than that, a month ago, We had a flyby with this Ion spacecraft, DS-1, Deep Space One.
Yes.
And it was doing great and doing all its neat stuff and programming itself and navigating itself and not reporting home until it had to talk to anybody. And they get to the asteroid, and guess what? It points the camera in the wrong direction, boys and girls. It doesn't know where the asteroid is. Now, when you deconvolve that, it's crap. It's more gobbledygook. Because to navigate autonomously, meaning by itself, without instructions from Earth, the onboard system had to have sensors to find the asteroid, plot it against the background stars, calculate the engine burns, calculate the angles, do all of this.
It had to know where it was.
Exactly, and then they missed taking the pictures. Well, the reason we got no pictures is because they saw something they don't want us to see. And it's time the American people say enough is enough. Well, in the next half hour, I'm going to tell you what you can do tonight and tomorrow morning that can help put a stop to this nonsense once and for all. We have got a major new plan to unveil tonight. And the coincidence of me being here in Los Angeles at Paul David's house working on this as this faux pas happens on global television is pretty astonishing.
It is astonishing, Richard. I have no words. Hold on. I really have no words. Or do I? In other words, what's the difference between the hand of man and software? They seem to want to delineate here. It was the hand of man that wrote the software, like an airplane flight taking off and landing, or taking off and entering a satisfactory orbit, are the two most critical parts of any flight or space mission of the sort we're conducting. And how could they have let it go wrong?
The Carla Red Talk 1051.
Richard Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Good morning. We have lost a spacecraft. Maybe. A $125 million spacecraft called the Mars Climate Orbiter that had traveled 416 million miles to Mars has, according to stories out there, vanished, re-entered, burned up, been destroyed, or maybe not. Richard C. Hoagland is here, and he'll be right back with more. How would you like to look and feel 10 years younger in 10 weeks? Now there's... Well, all right. Here we go again. We have apparently a destroyed spacecraft now. Richard is saying that he believes that it may in fact be not destroyed, but still up there taking pictures of things that he believes NASA does not want us to see. Now, I have something I want to say. I don't necessarily agree with Richard. I'll stick my neck out here, and I'm going to let Richard come right back at me. But whatever else NASA is or isn't, I just don't think they are that kind of organization. I mean, $125 million taxpayer spacecraft. Hard as it is to understand how this error could have been made, you know, there's still some of the old Boy Scout in me, and I just can't believe that NASA would do that, that they would conduct a charade, or if you wish, charade, of sending a spacecraft that far for that much just to do it in when it arrives, or do it in as far as the public is concerned. Either way you want to look at it, that there would be a conspiracy that big, I just can't believe it. Richard, that's still in me, and I can't wrap my mind around that one, partner.
Well,
I know what you believe, and now you can make your case, but that's my case. I just...
Well, but in a weird way, Art, we're saying exactly the same thing, because I agree with you. This is not NASA. This is not the agency. From day one, when I stood at the National Press Club, and we gave our press conference a couple days after it had been announced 6 years ago that Mars Observer had disappeared in an eerily similar fashion. I made crystal clear that we were dealing with what I termed at that time a rogue element.
Yeah, but it really wasn't a similar fashion. If my recollection is correct, they said that there was a fuel explosion that sent that thing tumbling.
Well, that was the analysis after the fact that
right. They
had turned off the telemetry, so there was no data. Here, you went behind Mars,
That's true.
There was no data.
That's true. So there was no data at the time of
And when you have no data, there's nothing to analyze.
Guess
with no data is as good as your guess or my guess.
I know. I know. It sounds
bad. But what
bad.
I'm saying here is, look, we had sources after Mars Observer. This is what is so eerie and what relates specifically to this announcement I'm going to make in a couple of minutes here.
Mm-hmm.
We had sources, four different engineers inside NASA who called me after the so-called disappearance 6 years ago and told me it was alive and well and had been taken into the black. And when you start to go through the detailed timeline of all the efforts that were conducted to bring it back, to find it, to rescue it,
right,
to determine if it was still alive somewhere out there
right.
6 years ago,
right,
you find the one thing that was never done, which was inexplicable and is unaddressed to this day.
And that is?
They did not reboot the backup computer.
I remember.
All right?
Yes.
And remember,
yes.
You carry on spacecraft two separate computers just in case something goes wrong with number one. You got number two. It's
right.
called redundancy.
Right.
Well, if I send a secret set of commands to the backup computer to take control of the mission at a critical time and, in essence, change the phone number of the front computer, and then tell the front computer, oh, and if they call you, don't answer, then a small group of guys in a basement with a set of computers can hijack any damn mission they want to with absolutely no knowledge of the majority honest part of the agency.
Okay, but we do, all right, here's a, then deal with this. We have now an orbiter circling Mars, taking photographs.
Mars Global Surveyor.
That's right, because you have been on here urging people to get better pictures of the face on Mars at Cydonia.
And we just passed a critical milestone.
But so if you're going to kill spacecraft going to Mars so that we don't see something, why not kill that one too?
Because those pictures are coming down through one pipeline that goes through Michael Malin's office, and he, by contract, doesn't have to show anybody else in NASA anything he ever takes.
Yeah.
He is legally a man unto himself. He is autonomous. He is God. He is the king of the solar system. You know, think of Jim Cameron on the front of the Titanic.
Yep.
Whereas with the Mars Climactic Orbiter, the data stream and the discovery process is contractually different. So it would be much more difficult for them to sequester from the honest guys in NASA. Remember, it's not us that they're doing this for. It's for the honest part of the system, the folks inside the agency who, after a year ago, when the Mars Surveyor pictures were taken of Cydonia,
yes,
we have had reports of all kinds of dissensions in the honest ranks.
All right, scientists
who were looking at Cydonia, those pictures, the cat box image included, and saying, oh, my God, look at that.
Yeah, but all right, here's another one for you, Richard, for you to think about. NASA is... right at a sort of a cutting-edge juncture point where they're about to perhaps lose more funding yet, more funding going away for the space program. And failures like these sure as hell aren't going to help them get the funding they must have and surely do want. So why would they allow this to occur at such a politically inconvenient time?
We're dealing with a rogue group who has its own agenda, its own mission, its own directives, its own game plan.
Yeah, but if people get pissed and Congress cuts funding, then they won't have any spacecraft to steal anymore. If
that
scenario is true.
Maybe they know enough. Maybe this is a veritable hemorrhage now in terms of the honest guys.
Oh, God.
And they don't need to know anymore because they know enough to take it to the next level, which involves black ops, electrogravitic spacecraft. Go back to what we're seeing on STS-80. Remember the secret space program?
You know I do.
And by the way, I've got another tape. I've got another mission now. This one, which I'll send you a copy of, shows something in Earth orbit, and the ground camera, you know, commander from Houston is zooming in on the anomalous object.
Yes.
And suddenly the video is cut off in mid-frame. Censored. It flips back to Houston.
Well, I told you the story, or if I didn't, you heard me tell it to someone on the air.
Yes, I heard it the other night with Steve Bannon.
I actually had a person who worked on a Star Wars here at the house.
Yep.
A person I will not name by their request.
Look, I understand.
But they looked at that and they said, "Oh my God, I worked on that." That's exactly what they said.
Well, we've got another example. STS-96 is the mission, which shows something equally anomalous below the shuttle, and then when the camera is remote controlled and zooms in on it, that's when it's censored and you go to black.
Get it to me.
And cut back to the inside of mission control.
Get it to me.
I will get it to you.
All right.
Let me tell you what we're up to here and why this is so incredibly coincidental. Ever since Mars Observer disappeared, I have been quietly working with Paul Davids, who, as you know, did Roswell.
Yes.
The very now classic Showtime film.
Of course.
About what happened at Roswell. Paul and I have been working on a project. We have been working for 6 years on a major motion picture.
Now, oh, really?
On the face on Mars.
Really?
I am able to tell you.
That's why you're there.
That's why I'm here.
I'll be damned. I knew nothing of this, folks.
Tonight, no, the artist knows nothing about this.
Yeah, that's right. Nothing.
You can keep secrets, at least I can. I am here to tell you tonight that literally as we speak, one of the people who is listening perchance to the show is a gentleman named Ron Meyer, who just happens to be the chairman of Universal Pictures, who is an Art Bell fan. He listens to the show. He's followed our work and all that.
Hi, Ron.
At his request this week, the script went to him and other key executives at Universal pending a decision as to whether Universal Pictures will make this into a major motion picture.
Wow.
And in part, it is the story, the inside story of what we have now figured out about what happened 6 years ago to an eerie replay of tonight, Mars Observer.
Oh, you're right. This is synchronistic beyond all reason.
Now, what folks can do, if you really want to call an end to this nonsense, what we need you to do tonight is to write down the following. Get a pencil and paper here.
All right, I have one.
All right. You want to send email to www.universalpictures.com. UNIVERSAL Pictures, PICTURES.com, all one word, lowercase. On that page, you will find an email address. Click on the email.
Yeah.
When it says which film, write down The Face on Mars. When it says under comments, write, I think Richard Hoagland and Paul Davids' film, The Face on Mars, would make a great new Universal motion picture. And if enough of you do this tonight and tomorrow, and Ron gets to read them, which he will, you can change this picture permanently.
God, I'd love to see a movie about that.
Because with these resources, think of the resources we will have at our command. We have written one hell of a semi-fictionalized, semi-documentary, and we're not going to know where the real stuff ends and the fictional stuff begins because we've been pretty good at that. All right, I'm made it here with a master. And by the way, he's got another film you're going to see someday called Starry Night, which is an incredibly interesting version of Vincent van Gogh's life that you'll never believe when you see it.
Oh, well, he's a hell of an interview. I've interviewed Paul Davids, as you all know, and
yep.
He's a great interview, and he's a great motion picture producer. And all right,
we
so
have
let,
worked
let,
long and hard on this.
As you know, Scotty,
I've asked you guys to do this now twice before.
Stop for a second. Scotty is on his way to Los Angeles. Otherwise,
oh, good.
Otherwise, we could get a link up immediately.
All right.
But so I'm going to have to give out this address again because
I don't
think
with his laptop.
He can get there. Yeah, he can do that probably later tonight or tomorrow. But again, folks, the...
I'll have the link on our site and on enterprisemission.com so that you just click on our site and you'll go right to
that.
The
it's
result.
Not there yet. So right now, if you want to send the email, it's www.universalpictures.com.
Yep.
And when it asks you what movie type in the face on Mars?
Type in the face on Mars.
Face on Mars.
And then when I ask for comment, you know, let them know what you think. I don't want to dictate what you say, but I think this would be an incredible political leverage to finally blow the doors wide open.
Oh, I agree.
Because it will give us the multi-millions of dollars to do what we need to do to bring closure.
Yeah.
I've asked twice before for everyone in this country to do two very important things.
Do you expect technical help from NASA?
Of course. The honest guys. Remember... There's a middle of the curve of people after the photos that you guys got for us. Remember, the audience to the Art Bell Show all across the country sent
tens of
thousands of faxes to Dan Golden.
Oh, yes.
And demanded pictures, and we got them. When that happened, our sources...
But they were really pissed.
Well, the dishonest ones were pissed, but the honest ones began looking at those pictures, and there has been a ferment going on within the agency for the last year. Because for the first time, they were forced to look at this since the Viking data.
So you honestly believe that NASA would give technical assistance to a movie of the kind you're talking about here?
Some.
Really?
Remember, it's not dealing... When people say the government is against this, that's wrong. The government is intensely factionalized. It's like a series of Middle Ages baronial fiefdoms. And there are warring factions. I am here. I have had dinner in the last week with some people who are very plugged into the military-industrial black ops NASA process. They have told us some pretty astonishing things about an opening of the system. Now, as I was reading the tea leaves, you know, literally looking at that in the context of the last 16 years of this journey we've been on, suddenly I get the news today that this new spacecraft suddenly has gone missing.
I know, incredible.
Well, if there's a deep black group that is determined at all costs to keep us from knowing what's there, and there's a larger circle of people who don't think we're ready, but now they begin to think that maybe it's time to get us ready, then there's an intense competition between these two groups, and the only avenue left for the deep black group might be to take this new spacecraft offline, because the technology would be such that it would be hard to keep the new pictures from the honest guys. And it's the honest guys in the system that are the Achilles heel. So you can imagine, into the pot, if we can throw a major motion picture done by a major motion picture studio...
I agree.
...run by a guy who's an Art Bell fan.
I absolutely agree. What a horrid burr inside of some this would be. And I wonder how much pressure behind the scenes there will be to see to it that this one hits the old fertilizer can before it ever...
The place to start, we know we've done it on the Miami Circle, and there's stunning new developments there, which we don't have time to get to tonight, but we will in the next few days.
Sure.
We got pictures a year ago. Remember when I was on the show the last time, I said we were coming up on an opportunity for images on the 27th of August.
Yes, of course.
Something very peculiar happened, everybody, around that opportunity.
What?
Well, the opportunity came and went, and there was nothing. I remember on June 27th, which was the previous opportunity, Malin waited 12 days before he posted the strip across the city.
Yes.
We now have four images of Sidonia on the record. Well, we waited and waited and waited after the 27th of August, and nothing happened. But 2 days after the opportunity, after the Celestial Mechanics opportunity...
Right.
Malin did post something on his website.
What?
He posted another version of the Happy Face crater, which I frankly interpret as an up yours.
Yeah, I know. I agree. By the way, I agree with you there. That whole Happy Face release thing was definitely an up yours, and the yours was Richard Hoagland's.
Yeah, but think of this. This new image on the 27th was supposed to be, in essence, a duplication at probably 50 times the resolution of the 1976 high sun angle of the face. Looking straight down,
2
o'clock in the afternoon that.
Yep. It was an opportunity to get a similar photograph from a similar angle with a similar sun.
Exactly, much higher res.
Right.
Now, suppose that image somehow got out into the general NASA community inside the system. Suppose then there was a demand with the new spacecraft, which has better cameras and could be put into a better orbit to get even better data on a much more periodic basis. Would it not be a reason why suddenly you have to, quote, lose a whole spacecraft so you don't have the capability, again, for the honest guys who are going to make the final political decision within the system?
Well, I've got to admit, Richard, one thing. It's very difficult to swallow the kind of mistake they're claiming caused this. Really, 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 really hard to swallow. I mean, they're really good at the math they do regarding burn times and knowing exactly where something is going to be. They're really, really good at that. Or either that or they're not really good at it, in which case Cassini should have scared the crap out of us.
Well, remember, we have a 30-year track record of knowing they're really, really good.
Well,
that's
what they were claiming when Cassini came by.
The same kind of navigation.
Good track record. We don't make mistakes in this kind of sort of area.
The same kind of navigation is what got the astronauts to the moon. Everybody from Neil Armstrong to Jim Lovell to Ed Mitchell, et cetera.
Absolutely.
Remember the quotes from Borman and Lovell and Anders on Apollo 8 when they were told by Mission Control, we'll lose you over the hill at 10:19:37 and for 3/10 of a second. And at 10:19:37 and 3/10, bingo, the radios go dead, and Lovell turns to Anders and says, boy, they're damn good. And their lives depended on it, because if they had been 12 and a half miles too low, they would have crashed into the moon. End of Apollo program.
End of this hour. Now, again, folks, send email en masse. Send email to www.universalpictures, you can spell all that, universalpictures, all run together, .com. Comment, or when it asks you what movie, write in The Face on Mars and tell them you want this movie produced, and I really want this movie produced. What a surprise from you tonight, Richard. Thanks for your overview on what happened or what didn't happen. I don't know what to say. We'll do a show next week.
There's only one way to say this at the end, okay?
Yep.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. See you, Richard.
You too.
Enjoy LA. We'll be right back.